through 40 days, 6 weeks of nonviolent moral fusion direct action, education, organizing, was incredible. You know, it's been years in coming. People have been saying for many, many years, have been doing some deep work in communities across this country, trying to cross lines of division to build a movement that can change the priorities. And what we were able to accomplish over the course of the last month and year is incredible. There are coordinating committees that have formed in 40 states across the country, in every region of this country. And those coordinating committees are made up of people that are crossing lines of race, of faith tradition, of gender orientation, and of all the lines of division that are kind of wreaking havoc in our country today. In the course of the 6 weeks, over 5,000 activists participated in civil disobedience at state capitals. There were 30,000 people across the country that participated in actions, and 20 to 25,000 people participated in the June 23rd call to action rally and march in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall and near the Capitol, who committed to go back to their states and organize for the long term. And those leaders, over the course of the 40 days, over the June 23rd march and rally, were, as we called them, the founding members of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. The narrative around poverty and poor people, the narrative around morality and what is morality in this world, has begun to shift decisively. There were stories, news articles, and other media hits that appeared in every major national media outlet. And there were literally thousands of articles and media hits that happened in each of the 40 states where we are active. We trended nationally on Twitter, and there were tens of millions of impressions on Twitter and on Facebook. There were hundreds of thousands of people who joined the live streams, and really in social media, there was a very strong response where people were talking about the issues, referencing the Souls of Poor Folk audit that the Institute for Policy Studies, the Urban Institute, other economists and impacted people and policymakers, you know, carried out and launched right before the campaign. And many of those, that research and facts and figures and faces, were the basis for much of the moral demands that the campaign put together, and much of the messaging that we had throughout the 40 days. And activists and coordinating committees across this country have been trained in movement building skills, including media outreach, social media, theomusicology and cultural arts, organizing, nonviolent civil disobedience, public speaking, and a lot more. There have been networks formed amongst movement lawyers, amongst movement cultural artists, popular educators, social media organizers that did not exist before. And in states across the country, there are these new networks that have developed. And the role of political education and movement building has been advanced and popularized. The music and movement cultural arts of the Poor People's Campaign was a centerpiece of the work. People have popularized and spread new songs, new chants. There's beautiful banners and signs and artwork that has been created. And really, indeed, of movement is growing. And so we want to thank everyone on this call who are a part of that success and so much more, and who have committed to taking this to the next level. And so I want to turn this back to Reverend Barbara now, who's going to talk about some of the next phases of the campaign.
Thank you so much, Reverend Theo Harris, and to all of you all that are listening. I was listening as you were talking, thinking about how just on that day at the mall, our social media people reported that over 400,000 people looked at it the first time. And on the first hearing we had in the Senate, over 200,000 people. And just the other day, I was somewhere and somebody said, thank you, the Poor People's Campaign for reviving many, not only Newsom, but many of the songs and the singing and the style of Bernice Reagan and others, and the field musicology and the poetry. So much, as you write, has gone on. Now, you all know on this call, that movements are built one step at a time. The difference between a movement and a moment is that it is about building, which is why we tried to be clear that the 40 days and all that led up to it was the launching of a movement. It was not the end of a movement. First thing, as we talk about this movement and going forward in next steps, I think it is clear that the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, is a campaign. It is a campaign. And it is critical that we understand it as a campaign, as an organism, and not just another organization. Undergirding it are several organizations, Cairo Center Repairs the Breach, the Popular Education Project, the various entities, but it is a organism, a campaign. And the PPC, as we call it, National Call for Moral Revival, is a campaign that says, if America does not face and address systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of Christian nationalism and religion nationalism, and that form of extremism, then the question is if America can even be America. That's the weight of this campaign. It is not just a moment. And the only reason for anyone should be in this campaign is because they believe this. They believe in these five issues, that we're not just creating another organization or isolating issues, but part of going forward in the next phase is to understand, as we said, through all of those stops over 15 states, we said there has to be a remnant of people who will raise these issues, both empirically and anecdotally, to hit and shift and shape the conscience of the country, the conscience of the nation. Now, as we move forward, we've been talking about there are three big things we have to do: consolidate power, deepen and broaden and increase power, if you will, and then use the power. Consolidate it, build power, and use power. Consolidate power, build power, and use power. Consolidating power means in this phase, we must build, and this is why the coordinating committees are so critical, for lack of a better word, disciples of the movement, people who know intrinsically the five issues, people who understand why these five issues can never be separated, people who understand why somebody has to take on some movement, the goal of organizing and calling to the fore the 140 million poor and low wealth people in this country. That is a must, but it requires building, as again I said, disciples, if you will, that learn, that study, that know, that have the capacity to hold a movement so that it's not just rooted in one or two people, you know, in the top. That has never been our model. So consolidating power and building these disciples is a part of the next phase. Number two, building power, and that is deepening and broadening and increasing. Yes, we had over 400,000 people to view on the 23rd, and hundreds of thousands and millions, tens of millions of Twitter impressions, and over 25,000 people at the launch on the 23rd of June. But now we have to broaden and deepen and increase. We said we would begin to mobilize. We have to deepen that. In other words, make sure that the persons that who came in through the 40 days or the lead up to the 40 days have a deeper understanding and a deeper commitment to this campaign, that we broaden even broader than it is now, and that we broaden it in terms of the people who are engaged from all different races, creeds, colors, and sexualities. And then, and that we increase the numbers, that we increase our numbers. We have coordinating committees, but now it's critical to increase those numbers. And then we have to use power. The reason you build power in a campaign, if it was a political campaign, the purpose of the campaign is to get someone elected. in a moral campaign and a poor people's campaign. The purpose is to elevate the person, to impact the people, to give them the stage so that other people don't always have the stage and we never hear from the people who are impacted. And then to use that power to influence what is going on, because while we are nonpartisan, we are not non-political. We are very clear about the political and that policies impact the lives of poor and impacted people. And if we're going to say we care, we are Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, part of that moral revival has to be not only calling forth the people, but calling forth the people to be engaged and civically engaged in a way that they can begin to shift the politics, not only who gets elected, but what people do once they get elected. And so how do we do that? Well, in terms of growing forward, beginning next week, we will begin, as you have heard, having the first weekend of simultaneous, what we're calling registering people for the movement who will vote. Registering people for the movement who will vote. It's different than just going out doing voter registration. It is targeting those areas, those impacted areas where people aren't often targeted, or where they are, they're merely asked to register to vote, but they're not invited into a movement. They're not deeply informed about what's going on and what's possible. So we will begin simultaneously across the nation, and where media will be embedded with us so that when other people are talking about what are we doing? We're engaging in this season to register people for the movement who will vote. We're saying it's time now to take off the sackcloth of ashes about who got elected to the White House and what the Congress is or not doing, and go to work. And go to work to register people for the movement who will in fact vote, and vote with a deep consciousness. Because we know all across this country, as we're beginning to look at data, there are places where poor and impacted people could turn the tide of elections from the South all the way to the North, the East, and the West. They could turn the tide. And if you add to them poor people and moral leaders and advocates, they could turn and change not only who is elected, but what they do once they get elected. But we need to register people not just to vote, but register people for the movement who will vote. And this will begin next week and then happen beginning now each month, all the way through November. Also, as we attempt to deepen the movement and deepen people's understanding, we're beginning a process of pilot field hearings. Seven, I believe, at first, but then they'll move. We're trying to model these. And these are the kind of field hearings where elected officials and others are invited to, but they're not invited to talk. They're invited to listen to the people, to impact the people, and what is actually happening in their areas, and the policies and how those policies are affecting the poor among us. On August 28th, we're going to be releasing a letter from denominational leaders and impacted persons who were a part of the movement, not who weren't a part of, but people who literally got arrested during the 40 days. It will demand a ending of child violence from the border to the attack on SNAP programs, to the attack on healthcare, CHIPS program. We're going to say that there has to be a stopping of this, and we're demanding that it be stopped, but also that the Senate held a hearing where clergy leaders, denominational leaders, who some of them lead denominations as much as a million people, can come in with impacted people, not to talk themselves, but to bring impacted people, real people who will be hurt and are being hurt by these policies that's creating so much child violence, from snatching children at the border, to snatching away their food stamps, to snatching away their health care. And as we go forward on September the 7th, in order to create this deep discipleship, we've invited the tri-chairs and to a gathering in Maryland and some others for a 2 to 3 day training, where we're going to be not only training, but talking among ourselves about the next steps and hearing from the ground because we started hearing from the ground. If you remember, when we began this campaign, we didn't start with a bunch of national organizations at the top coming down. We came into the community. We met wherever we were invited, people who wanted to be involved, and we offered a vision, but also heard from the people, and we're going to continue to do that. We also, in the next phase of the movement, in order to broaden and deepen, are taking some real steps to talk with media and social media tech people to look at how is it that we can raise the profile of every state coordinating committee to the point where we have at least 25,000 people or more per state that are actually deeply trained on the issues that we're concerned about and committed to the movement, that our movement, that your states can touch at any time for mass action, for mass voting, for all those kinds of things. So that's a part of the phase in terms of building out power, deepening and broadening, and being able to use that power. We are also listening and working on plans to talk about how we can have, as we build the movement, specialized citizenship schools. Because again, a movement has to build the citizenry. I was recently at the memorial for Dorothy Cotton, and was reminded that when her and Septima Clark and others built citizenship schools, they touched over 6,000 people in the South. And those 6,000 people later on became bosses. We would not have some of the things that we have today if people had not gone through those schools, and schools like Highlander and those kinds of things. Well, we have to have 21st century models of that, because we're building a movement, an organism, not just an organization. And then how do we use those masses of people to lobby and push at the state capitals where we were arrested, but now we have to go in back and push policies and push the people who are making the policies and forming people so they'll know how to vote on those making policies. And how do we also push at the federal level? And citizenship schools are going to be critical to that. And that conversation is going on right now. Will be more in September as we talk about the next one. Finally, we are working with IPS and the Urban Institute and others about finishing now the people's budget with policies rooted in the findings from the Soul of Poor Folks audit. And we have said all along that this movement would be deeply empirical, that we would have the best minds and the brightest minds working with impacted people and other scholars and other moral leaders, because we're not just saying, you know, somebody ought to help the poor. We have specific policies that work. We know what will work. The issue is not that America doesn't know what will work. America doesn't have the will to work what will work. And part of our movement is to not only change the will of the country, but in changing the will of the country, we must put a vision before the country. We can't just say we're against Donald Trump. We have to be for it. What are we for? What do we want? And why do we want it? And why does it work? And so these are some of the broad strokes as we began to move forward in building a movement, step by step by step. 40 days was the launching. The 40 days got the nation's attention. Now we have to be very deliberate and very focused, building the foundation, building up. Will there be other mass actions? Yes. Will there be met? Yes. But we are working to be very strategic, and we'll be working intentionally and intensely with those on the ground as we build this movement in such a way that it can be held, and the movement is held by all of you who are deeply concerned and who recognize that this is not just about one election cycle, that if America doesn't face the issues of systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy and militarism and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism, then the very idea of America is at stake and at question. And so we wanted to share that in those ways. I want to, Laurel, to have you turn the agenda over to the next person. I believe it's Ross Pellis, who's going to be talking with us about canvassing and speak outs and some other things. But I want to make sure that I'm saying that right. That Roz is going to come on.
That's correct. Roz, take it away.
Yeah. So good evening, everybody. I just want to follow up what we've heard from both from Reverend Barber. He talked about what's happening in the next phase of this campaign, and also to appreciate the achievements that Reverend Liz laid out. And I just wanted to focus on the fact that the states have really taken seriously the call to deepen our work and to broaden our work at the same time, and to consolidate our efforts in state after state. And that call has led people to take seriously and to go out and to prepare to do on the weekend of August 25th, both state canvassing, where we register people for the movement and register people to vote, and followed by speak-ins that same weekend, where speak-outs, where people really make sure that the voices of the impacted persons are heard all over this country continue to be heard. And so I just want to lay out some of the states that will be participating in the canvassing and in the speak outs, and hoping that folks who are not involved will reach out to folks in those states. But for the states that are doing the canvassing and the speak outs on the weekend of August 25th, Vermont, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Mississippi, Louisiana, Illinois, Florida, South Carolina, Kansas, California, Maryland, Virginia, Tennessee, Alabama, Arizona, Delaware, Oregon, North Carolina, Arkansas, those states spreading the breadth and width of this country are doing the canvassing and speak outs. We've got some other states that are doing canvassing: Iowa, Maine, Wisconsin. So what we're seeing is that all over that people have taken this up, and that the intention is to carry this campaign forward without stopping, but realizing that a lot is at stake and our work is serious. And to follow this this first weekend, we expect that throughout the period coming through November, that there will continue to be various opportunities for states to canvass in cities and in designated districts in their states. In addition to the canvassing efforts and to the speak outs, we'll be holding hearings, field hearings, where people can educate, can let people in their states and their politicians know more about the issues, to hear about those issues, and to come and to learn from folks who are involved in this struggle, who are involved in the Poor People's Campaign, and who are impacted by the ills that Dr. King laid out. And so we're expected to have hearings in many of the states that are already doing some of the activities around canvassing and speak outs. But in particular, there'll be at least 7 national hearings that will begin September 24th in North Carolina and in Virginia, the 26th of September in Arkansas, October 15th in Wisconsin, October 17th in Maryland, October 22nd in Louisiana, November 13th. And then we're expecting some other states to come on. Folks in Kansas and folks in Missouri are already making plans and trying to figure out how they too can be hosts for these national field hearings. So this gives us a snapshot of phase 2 of this amazing campaign, this amazing undertaking to save the soul of this country. So I just wanted to both appreciate the folks of the states who are doing this work, and also to call on folks who are not engaged in the work but are on this call tonight from all over the country by big numbers, who can to join this effort and to be a part of this movement that will change the United States.
Ross, thank you so much for that play, and you and both Liz and that have laid out how we connect achievements and then continuing action, and how we use this what we've done to call out what we have to do. And we also hope that on next weekend, and there will be many other weekends between now and November, but that everybody that's canvassing, see, will wear a Poor People's Campaign t-shirt or some sign. That media will invite media. We want them to come walk with us, see us in the beauty parlors and in the stores and on the street corners, talking to people and handing out information to them and letting them know what, you know, not only what we're fighting against, but what we're fighting for. Because the more and more we embrace and more we go into the communities, we're going to do something that others sometimes talk about but don't do. We're going in the communities that are impacted, because that's where the revival and the hope of this country lies. It lies, as Liz has often said, you know, quoting Dr. King, you know, in that force of people that really have nothing else, you know, to lose. But in that place, they actually have the power to transform the country. You know, it lies in all of the places where poor and impacted people are beginning to understand that we must be together regardless of our color, class, creeds, and sexualities. And that is our role. And if we began to mobilize in a serious way a powerful remnant of the 140 million, it will literally begin to shift the country. Imagine if in 40 states, that between those 40 states, if the Poor People's Campaign alone could touch 1 million people. Sometimes you hear that number. People say, what's 1 million? Well, 1 million is 25,000 in 40 states. And with all of them, and I often say Harriet Tubman got 500 slaves out of slavery, and she didn't have Twitter, she didn't have email, she didn't have Yahoo, none of those things. She had a made-up mind, a deep, serious attitude about freedom and justice. We have so much more, and you all have done so much more. You've proven what could happen when people said it couldn't happen over 40 days. And now, as Roz and Liz have said, we move into this next phase. And the first of it is to register people to vote for the movement who vote, so that they're not just engaged during the election, but they'll be engaged beyond the election. And these hearings and other things are going to be important to that. Laura, I know that you had another piece you wanted to lay out tonight. And so I'm going to turn it back over to you. You call on the next person.
Thanks, Reverend Barber. So now we're going to hear from just a small handful of some of the state leaders who are moving this work forward. In their states, there are many hundreds of them all around this country, but we're really happy to hear from four of them tonight. They're going to be reading statements that were prepared by their coordinating committees, just giving a little glimpse of the accomplishments that they are excited to share out to the world about the launching phase of this campaign. So I'm going to turn it on over to Solomon from Arkansas.
Okay, thank you, Laura. And it's an honor to get to share with all of you from Arkansas tonight. During the 40 days of action, Arkansas feels like we learned firsthand what moral fusion coalition building looks like and feels like. We had about 100 people on average meeting in Little Rock for the weekly Moral Mondays during the campaign launch. We had more than 15 organizations who were kind of organizing together to plan the events and to attend the events. We had 30 people who participated in nonviolent civil disobedience. So it's in behalf of all of them that I'm sharing a little bit. We faced challenges, and we appreciated the joy of meeting people from various parts of the state who came together around these five interconnected issues. We really energized each other because we found people that were willing to work together, even though we didn't have much knowledge about, you know, each other or our history and past. We were just united in our commitment to challenge injustice together, even with sisters and brothers in jail. Sometimes we got stressed out, probably like some of you. We had to learn lessons about how to build people power alongside people who live in communities impacted by poverty. And we grew because of those challenges. So we know our work is far from complete. Sometimes we feel like we have more energy in our state for a Poor People's Campaign then we have capacity to organize that energy. But we're ready. Relationships that were new have now grown stronger. We feel like we're more unified now. We're more experienced now. We're bolder now, and we're more committed to the long term. So in Arkansas, we found the beginning of a new unsettling force, and we feel powerful. We're determined to lose our chains and help our sisters and brothers do the same. That's it.
Thank you, Solomon. Now I'm going to pass it off to Reverend Carolyn Foster from Alabama.
Well, I'm excited to share with you some of our accomplishments here in Alabama. Our coordinating committee met just last week. And one of the things that I shared with them is that some of them I did not even know before we came together. And now I don't know what I'd do without them in my life. We really came together and worked as one. We had groups from all over the state that participated in this wonderful fusion movement, ranging from environmental groups, education groups, social justice groups, faith communities from all spectrums, immigrant groups, you name it. They all joined the Poor People's Campaign and worked in what Reverend Barber really truly calls a fusion sort of way. And for a group of people who came together like we did in such a short period of time, I was just really amazed how it all worked, how things fell together, how people worked with each other, and willing to put their bodies on the line for what they really believed in. I think one of our strengths in this movement is that the Poor People's Campaign, A National Call for Moral Revival, gave us a platform for bringing us together. And even though we may be working in different areas of social justice, we came together and worked together, and it strengthened us and empowered us. It brought together people from all spectrums, a very diverse group of people. We really are working now on the second phase to get more impacted people involved. While we had some, we want more. And we want them to be able to be empowered and to feel the strength too, to speak on behalf of their own issues. And we support them. Alabama is a really a diverse state, but people tend to stay in their silos. But the Poor People's Campaign brought them out and brought us out and has us working in a way that I've never seen in my lifetime, I think. We're just very excited. What we want to do in this next phase is to get more people really more involved in what I heard Solomon say in emboldening us more to really get into areas that we didn't get a chance to touch during the 40 days. So we're really working hard to build our base and to continue to strengthen and train and empower people to go into areas that we were not able to impact fully during the 40 days launch. But now we're really focusing on getting into neighborhoods and communities and working to build a level of energy and power among low income and low wealth and poor neighborhoods. That's our focus. That's what we're excited about. And we're just ready to get going on the next phase of this Poor People's Campaign and the movement.
Thank you, Reverend Carolyn. I'm now gonna pass it off to Carol Smith in Missouri.
I think you're calling on me. Hi, this is Carol Smith with the state of Missouri. And in Missouri, we're very proud of our state's commitment to civil disobedience. We saw it grow throughout the 40 days And in our state capital, our arrests were second only to DC in number. We had over 208 arrests, with the Kansas City area leadership and participation helping to drive those numbers. We had low wage workers and octogenarians on walkers. So Missourians from diverse walks of life that came together for this moral revival of social and economic justice. In every case, in every week, we had low wage impacted persons that participated and were the power, the wind under our sails. The momentum began months prior to the 40 days, actually, when there were faith assemblies and public education. These events drew over 5,000 people from across the state, starting with a kickoff during the Martin Luther King Week in Kansas City, where we had speakers that read speeches from the final years of King's life that were really a charge and still totally relevant to the mission we had before us today. There were also faith assemblies and a march in Jefferson City on the anniversary of King's death. Another high point for all of us, I think, was the participation in nonviolent civil disobedience trainings. We held over a dozen across the state. And one of the most powerful times when people were eloquent and expressive in their discussions of which social movements throughout our history were most meaningful to them and why they were the engine always of social change in our country. The CD trainings always came with a surprise. Nearly every time when we expected a certain number, more people showed up, and people we'd never met before or had never signed a pledge card before. So that was exciting to see. St. Louis's leadership engaging artists was an asset throughout the campaign, both theo musicologists and as well as banners and t-shirts. And finally, in the organization and the eloquence of the speakers in Jefferson City was spot on and hotter than the hot sun. I don't know about anywhere else, but on 4 out of the 5 days, it was over 95 as we moved around Jefferson City. So those powerful personal perspectives, and again, always from impacted persons, as well as faith, labor, and civil rights voices. I wish we had a collection of them to share. They are an inspiration for the future. Tonight, we just had a labor rally in Kansas City to say America needs labor unions. And I'm proud to say we recently had a vote just last week where we voted down 2-1, 67%. Voted down right to work in the state of Missouri. That meant really every county voted it down. So yes. I think plenty of room to build and move forward from here and build a people's movement that's about strengthening the many low-wage workers we have in this country.
Thank you, Carol. I'm now gonna pass it off to Nijmi from Pennsylvania.
Great, thank you so much. Good evening, everybody. My name is Nijmi Zakia Zarinko, and I'm a directly impacted working class Black and Indigenous woman from Pennsylvania. I'm one of the chairs of the PA campaign, and what I want to share with you is that during the launch phase of the first 40 days of action in Pennsylvania, over 1,500 people from more than 30 counties in PA rallied at the Capitol, and 76 moral witnesses engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience. Our largest number of moral witnesses was during week 4 on the right to health care and a healthy planet, with 31 arrests. We assembled a coordination team with leaders from organizations of poor and dispossessed people in nearly every region of the state. Our coordination team is 1/3 millennials. Our actions engaged over 60 organizations, faith communities, and unions. Taking action together over the 6 weeks helped us to build and strengthen relationships and deepen our commitment to long-term power building in every corner of Pennsylvania across all communities.
Thank you, Nijmi.
Laurel?
Yeah.
Is she finished?
She's finished.
Okay. I wanted to just say one thing in response to all of these testimonies. Thank you. And there's some reoccurring themes that I hope we hear. People said they had trouble, but they didn't allow the trouble to cause them to divide. They grew. And it is possible to grow through trouble. And whenever you're meeting new people and growing in new ways and doing fusion, there will be some of that. But you don't see it as a negative. You see it as a place to grow. I heard somebody say that they now have people in their lives that they don't know what they would do without them, and they hadn't met them before, but they did action together. And that's one of the ways you deepen and broaden is get doing action together. That's the difference between a campaign and an organization. You know, a campaign doesn't have to do everything, but if that campaign can create significant actions where people can come together, and those actions can cause reverberations, and those actions can cause shift in consciousness, that's the purpose of a campaign. That's the purpose of a campaign. We want to keep reminding people of that. When you have an organism, you can invite a lot of people in to participate. If it's just an organization, then people become restricted, and we start saying you have to be a certain way. And one of the things we're figuring out, and we'll be figuring out, and have figured out, but we'll talk more about it in September when gathering, is what are the strategic actions we take to build this power? How do you register people for a movement so that they don't understand you're not trying to take them from their other organization? We're simply saying that we all have to be together in some time. We don't have to do everything together all the time. We have to do some things together some of the time, because the folk who are adversaries, believe you me, as we've taught, they stay together. They are not isolated. And then lastly, I just want to say I'm hearing so much about the different actions around the state, and I'm sure the boss and Liz and others are as well, and that there's a study, I'm trying to get a hold of it, that says something to the effect that if you can get 25,000 people in a nation to act in concert long enough, you can begin to shift things in that nation. Not 25 million, not 250,000, but 25,000. And we have to remember that from campaigns of the past. It was the Birmingham campaign that shifted the nation in many ways. The Montgomery campaign, it's not always everybody, but it's the somebodies who choose to act and to move in a certain period of time. And so I think it is very critical that we here keep saying that campaign, organism, not just organization, fusion. What are the key things? What are the four or five things that the Poor People's Campaign from the state and national needs to do in order to build power, to build platforms, to give force to impact the people that can shift. We saw a lot of that during the 40 days. There are people talking about moral issues now that weren't talking about it before, and so forth and so on. And then lastly, I want to personally encourage every coordinating committee, whenever you meet, to make sure it's somewhere in that room you have up that number 140 million so that we never forget what the real issue is, the 140 million poor and low wealth people. Have in that room, a picture of something of impacted people. Anytime that we want to, if there's a struggle and we feel like fighting each other, put up a great big picture of Trump so you can really remember that we have something to fight. And not just him, but the policies. Put up your legislature. Put up a picture of the Congress so that we keep, as the song says, our eyes on the prize. Whenever we may not be perfect in all that we do, but we have to be mature, and it's certainly a necessity that we stay together. Lastly, just the other day was talking to someone, and they made this statement that there comes a time in a nation where someone has to create enough turbulence to cause the nation to change direction. And I asked them what they meant by that. And they said, it's kind of like a plane that's headed toward a certain airport. If a certain amount of turbulence happens, the pilot will shift direction. The plane doesn't change. The plane will go on autopilot and continue to do what it's always done, fly where it's always flown. But if enough turbulence comes, the pilot will take it off autopilot and begin to shift the direction of the plane. Right now in America, nothing is more important than for those of us who believe in justice and love and truth is to be willing to create the kind of moral turbulence that can cause the nation to shift its direction. And my brothers and sisters on this call, that's who you are. That's who we are together. And that's what we've committed to together. And it's powerfully, almost overwhelming to hear these reports from the states. Laurel.
Thank you, Reverend Barber. Before we close out, I just want to remind everyone who is watching today that you can join the Poor People's Campaign and now call for more revival. You can get involved in your own state. And there's a few ways that you can do that. First, go and find your state on Facebook. Most of the Facebooks are just going to be your state. So Pennsylvania Poor People's Campaign, colon, a national call for more revival. You can email your state coordinating committee at whatever your state is. I'm going to use Pennsylvania again, Pennsylvania@poorpeoplescampaign.org. In the next couple of days, we're going to post the times and locations for those speakouts that Roz listed. I would like to add that Kentucky will also be having a speakout on the 25th. So go check out www.poorpeoplescampaign.org for more information about those speakouts, about those field hearings, and about the important work that is to come in this next phase of the campaign. Reverend Barber, Reverend Theo Harris, anything you'd like to say before we close?
I'll yield to my sister.
So I just want to thank everyone for being here and you know, as we kind of celebrate the achievements that we've had from this campaign and as we launch into this next phase, you know, we know that things are not easy out there, but we're living in a time when families are being separated from each other, when 140 million people in this country can be poor and low income, when we can be fighting for the right to vote, a fight that many of us thought wouldn't have to be waged again. And so we know that we need to kind of commit ourselves to a deep and wide movement. And so, you know, I think we're all rolling up our sleeves and getting ready for a long-term haul, a long-term battle, and building a deep movement. And so it's an honor to do that with you all. We know we have a lot of work to do, and we also know that people have just been rising up across this country, ready for this change and for this movement. And so we thank you. We look forward to being together with you all soon. And we are looking forward to the canvassing and the registering people for this movement and for you know, these hearings and the rest of the work that will come from all of it. So thank you all for joining us, and be well and go in peace.
Goodbye, everyone.